Right now on the Daily Debrief, a verdict in the case of a man accused of murdering his five kids. Also,
after probably 5 seconds of screaming, you just heard pop, pop.
A woman's plan to kill her ex-lover's new girlfriend. A member of the plot takes the stand.
One was to inject her with heroin. Another one was to inject her with a sedative.
And closing arguments as a former NFL player faces accusations of sex crimes against five women. Plus, an update in the death of a Houston girl missing for a month. The Daily Debrief recaps the day in court. It's Tuesday, June 4th. Welcome to The Debrief this Tuesday. I'm Aaron Keller, along with Linda Kenny Bodden. Joseph Scott Morgan will join us in just a couple of seconds. We begin in South Carolina, where a verdict has just been read in a case which left five children dead. Prosecutors say Timothy Jones faked mental illness symptoms to try to get away with killing his five kids. Jones suffered a brain injury years ago, and his family has a history of mental health issues. But he also searched the internet for places he could flee after his kids were dead by his own hands. Jones disciplined one to the point the child died and then said he killed the other four when they started to find out. Here is the verdict.
We, the jury, find as follows. As to indictment 188, Mira, guilty. As to indictment 189, Elias, guilty. As to indictment 190, Abigail, guilty. As to indictment 191, Gabriel, guilty. As to indictment 195, Natan, guilty. And it is so signed by the foreperson this fourth day of June 2019.
Here early tonight, our criminal defense attorney Linda Kenny Bodden and forensic death examiner Joseph Scott Morgan. So, Joseph, this is a case which involved a little bit less forensics and a little bit more law. But from where you sit, does this look like justice?
Yeah, I'd have to say so because of the evidence of all of the planning that went into this. He showed up specifically with tools in order to facilitate this this crime. He looked for a place to sequester these bodies in a hidden place after having driven around with them. And then he had materials which would indicate that he was looking to clean his vehicle. There's even evidence that muriatic acid was used in the vehicle to hide the evidence of his crime. So yeah, for me, I think that there was significant forensic evidence to tie back, but testimonial evidence was very powerful.
Exactly. Okay, Linda, the law part of this was the verdict. It was guilty across the board here, but the jurors could have considered not guilty by reason of insanity and guilty but mentally ill. They did not go for those options.
That's right. But you know what this case was, Aaron? This is the defense actually trying the death penalty case partly in the guilt phase, because all that evidence that you heard about him having these diseases, this mental sickness, this ability not to react properly, that's also going to be considered by the jury in the penalty phase.
Yes, we move to another phase now, and we'll have to wait and see how scheduling shakes out on that. We'll be back to the panel in just a moment. We are also waiting for a verdict in a California case involving the murders of an entire family there. A jury is deliberating whether Chase Merritt murdered a business associate and the business associate's entire family. A documentary film crew attached to the defense approached two alternate jurors for interviews. The issue is that the jurors had not been formally dismissed. The judge held a hearing on that matter and is weighing his options as deliberations continue. And now to Texas, where a second person is on trial over the alleged love triangle murder-for-hire plot, which left a young dentist dead. Brenda Delgado is accused of plotting for months to kill Kendra Hatcher. Hatcher was dating Delgado's ex-boyfriend, Ricardo Paniagua. She's accused of paying trigger man Christopher Love in money and drugs to actually shoot and kill Hatcher. Getaway driver Crystal Cortez pleaded guilty and agreed to testify against Love and Delgado. Love, keep in mind, was already convicted and is on death row. That getaway driver, Crystal Cortez, is a star witness, of course. She was on the stand today. She said the defendant was obsessed with the victim and her new boyfriend.
She showed me pictures of Ricky and Kendra, and she was just telling me that she was envious of Kendra. She also told me that Ricky was her best friend.
She had let you know that she had had a best friend. That was that an ex-boyfriend of hers?
Yes, he was also an ex-boyfriend.
Is that how she would refer to him, as her ex?
Yes.
And she was letting you know that there was an individual out there by the name of Kendra Hatcher.
Yes.
And what did she say was Kendra Hatcher's role in as far as Ricky is concerned?
I just remember seeing pictures when they were in San Francisco via social media, and that they were together.
Well, Brendan Delgado discussed Ricky and Kendra Hatcher to you.
Yes.
And what types of things was she talking about?
That she didn't like them together, that she wanted Ricky back.
And this stuff that you're saying that she saw on social media, where was she seeing that?
She had created a fake profile under the name of Stefan, and she had Kendra's page under that, and she was watching Kendra that way.
And from there, that getaway driver, Crystal Cortez, explained just how the defendant wanted to kill Kendra Hatcher.
One was to inject her with heroin, another one was to inject her with a sedative, and the other was to kill her with a gun.
Now, was there discussions about trying to find someone to help y'all do this?
Yes.
Who was asking who about trying to find someone?
Brenda was asking me if I knew somebody because I came from, like, a rundown neighborhood.
You tell her that you thought you might be able to help her with that?
Yes, I did.
What steps did y'all take to try to find someone?
We would drive around. First, we would drive around and asking people if they would be able to help us with stuff. And they would say yes or no.
Ultimately, the plot resulted in a shooting. Here is the testimony of a paramedic who responded.
We just knew it was somewhere in the parking garage. So me and my partner, and we responded with our engine crew as well. We all went and we just started walking the parking garage. There was nobody to meet us. So I believe we walked around for a few minutes before we finally got notified there was a police officer on a bicycle that had found the patient, and he directed us to the patient at that time.
And describe for the jury what you saw when you got to that portion of the scene.
We saw a car, we saw our patient laying on her back with the driver's side door open. She was just a little bit up underneath. As we approached, we saw a little trauma, or I saw a little trauma just under her chin. We had a little bit of blood in the area, a little bit of pooling, but immediately, me and my partner just went to work and didn't waste a lot of time. We felt for a pulse. My partner got on her side, and once we didn't feel a pulse, he started compressions. I quickly got an IV in her right arm and just continued our work from there, maybe a minute or so before we started to realize that there was going to be nothing coming back from this.
An eyewitness who just happened to be heading out for the night described what the shooting sounded like.
Went out around 7, went down into the elevators. Once I opened the door, you could just immediately hear screaming. At first, I thought it was an animal because it was just distorted a little bit. I couldn't really understand what it was, so I thought it was like a dog freaking out maybe. And then after probably 5 seconds of screaming, you just heard pop, pop. And after those pops, you hear the car door close, tires screech, and then a car coming down the ramp.
That was the getaway car driven by the woman you just heard from. Look, the defendant's cousin testified that it was Brenda Delgado, the defendant, who wanted to hurt Kendra Hatcher, and that Delgado was ready to pay.
She told me that she wanted me to just scare her, and she said she would pay me. And she never told me that she was, like, trying to hurt her. But I still told my mom because I took it as...
Again, don't tell the jury what your mom said.
Okay.
But you can tell the jury what Brenda said to you.
That she would help me, and I told her no. I wouldn't do any of that.
Did she offer you money to do these things?
Yes, sir.
And do you recall how much money she offered you?
I don't remember.
I'm sorry?
I don't remember.
You don't remember she offered you money?
No, I don't remember how much, the amount.
But you do remember being offered money?
Yes.
And in exchange for the money, what were you supposed to do?
Scare Kendra Hatcher.
you remember that conversation about a baseball bat?
Yes, sir.
What were you supposed to do with the baseball bat?
Like I said, scare her. I wasn't gonna hurt her or do anything.
A friend used the word obsessed to describe the defendant's thoughts toward her ex-boyfriend.
She would talk about him, his location, his emails, bank account, everything about him. She was really obsessed over him.
When you say location, what do you mean she talked about his location?
She would have a different phone, and she would basically know all his location and movement of him.
She was following him on a phone?
Yes, sir.
Were there times when she would tell you this is where he is right now?
Yes, sir. She was mad because Ricky broke up with her through an email. In my language, he didn't have the balls to tell her straight up how it was.
Okay, that's what led to this. All right, the same friend said the defendant asked her to help, quote, eliminate Hatcher and maybe even the ex-boyfriend.
She told me that first she wanted Ricky in a coma with the bat that is right in front of me. Also, for Kendra Hatcher, an injection needle to put it in her back of her neck. She just wanted to eliminate Kendra Hatcher or even both of them.
And in return for doing that, what were you supposed to get?
Drugs, $2,000, and a car.
Wow. Attorney Linda Kenny Bodden and forensic death examiner Joseph Scott Morgan are back once again to talk about this case. So, Linda, okay, let me get this straight. This whole thing started over a breakup over an email. And look, there's this old song that says breaking up is hard to do.
But well, breaking up is obviously easy to do.
Okay, but maybe this guy knew that there was something off about this defendant, and he's like, you know, I better not tell her in person because she's the sort of person who will try to get people to kill people.
Yeah, kind of like the case we had a while ago where the woman shot her boyfriend, you know, remember, over at a house and then claimed it was self-defense. This is unbelievable. They're driving around finding out, hi, Aaron, could you eliminate somebody for me? I'll give you $2,000, a car, maybe a Corvette, it could possibly be, and, you know, some drugs. I'm not going to tell you what kind. Unbelievable.
Exactly. Okay, Joseph Scott Morgan, let's hope the forensics line up with some of this in a case like this.
Yeah. You know, you would hope so. The testimonial evidence is blowing me away in this case, though. I have to say, when you've got two blood relatives, they're on the stand and they're testifying against you. The countenance of this young man, her cousin, who, you know, was approached about using a baseball bat to terrorize this woman, you could tell he wanted no part of this.
Exactly. They didn't want to be sitting there, but they reluctantly sat there and sort of let this roll on. And again, it's like, you know, as a prosecutor, I'm sitting there saying, okay, this is great for my case, but I want to have a couple pieces of forensics. I want to have some phone calls, some text messages to back this up to say, hey, these people are telling the truth on the stand.
You don't need it, Aaron. You've got, just got the baseball bat. Boom, home run out of the court right there on the testimony.
Joseph, you want the fingerprints on the bat, right?
Yeah, you do want the fingerprints. And all of that is very compelling. It goes back to the idea of connectivity. You know, where you're connecting these people through science to all of these events. And I think that that can readily be done with weapons and spent bullet casings and all of this sort of thing. But again, I go back to this idea, the testimonial evidence in this thing far outweighs the forensic evidence. The forensic evidence is just garnish around the plate in this particular case.
Oh, exactly, exactly. Look, this is a strong case for the state. We have to move along. Still ahead on the debrief, an update in the case of a Houston girl missing for nearly a month and then found dead. Plus, closing arguments in the sex crimes prosecution of a former NFL player. Will jurors believe the accusers or the defense? Welcome back, everybody. An update on the death of a girl who was missing from Houston, Texas for nearly a month. Malia Davis disappeared in May, and her stepfather, Darian Vance, was arrested around that time. He's said to have told a community activist while he was behind bars that the girl's body was in southwestern Arkansas, and that is where searchers went, and it's where searchers recovered her. They found the girl wrapped in a plastic bag and reported that the girl's remains had been hit by a lawnmower at one point. Searchers returned the body to Texas covered in a unicorn blanket out of respect for the memory of the little girl. So let's talk about the recent developments. Joseph Scott Morgan, this is your area of expertise. You're a forensic death examiner. With damaged remains, how do authorities try to find a cause of death?
It's very, very difficult, Aaron. In this particular case, in Malia's case, she had been missing for a protracted period of time. And let's keep in mind, this was in the Deep South. Even if they had found her body intact, there would still be an uphill battle for the ME down in Harris County in order to facilitate, you know, to try to come up with a cause of death on her. But given the fact that she was decomposing for a period of time, and also given the fact that she was struck by a roadside mower, which these things are powerful, I've heard some of the comments that the workers made where they were literally out there for hours trying to retrieve these particulate pieces of tissue. And it really impacted them, Aaron. I mean, to their core, you could hear it in their voices. And you're going to have to put all of that together in the autopsy suite to try to come up with how she was traumatized. Remember, we're not just talking about lethal trauma that led to, obviously, her death, but there was also allegedly antemortem trauma. This child was a child of abuse. She had been slapped around a number of times. So mm-hmm. You've got this existent on top of it. My fear is that much of the stuff is going to be eradicated as a result of the time that has transpired.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, the stepfather claims the girl died due to an accident. Let's hope the autopsy can shed light on that. But Linda, here's a couple of legal questions. We've got a community activist said he secured the confession in a jailhouse discussion. Look, it's sneaky, but I don't think that it can be suppressed.
No, Aaron, I agree with you. It's sneaky, but you know, they're still looking for the little remains of the little girl. So, I mean, that kind of trumps everything, especially since he's not a cop and he was trying to do the right thing.
Okay, and of course, the next question is anybody legally going to buy Vance's shifting stories here? You know, some would say excuses. If a girl is hurt in an accident, don't you call the paramedics and not run to Arkansas with the body in a bag? Linda?
Well, generally, Aaron, obviously the defense is going to be she died from a pre-existing condition because she had severe brain disease that she had two surgeries for. That's going to be the issue, and that he just got scared.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see how this one rolls out. We'll be back to both of you in just a couple of seconds because we're turning back now to the case of a former NFL player accused of a series of sex crimes against five women. Kellen Winslow II played 10 seasons with the Cleveland Browns and other teams. He faces 12 counts, some in multiples, and almost all involve various sex crimes. The accusers range in age from 17 to 77. During closing arguments, prosecutors emphasized the pattern in Winslow's alleged behavior. Each Jane Doe had a similar story.
Lightning certainly doesn't strike twice, let alone five times. This man took what he wanted from them and threw them aside like a piece of trash because that's what he thought that they were. Make no mistake, he has proven himself to be a sexual predator. Time and time again, motivated by his own perverse sexual pleasure, to dominate and take what is not his. Ladies and gentlemen, that is his motivation. To steal their dignity, who they are, regardless of what effect that may have on them. That's what happened here. And you've heard it from the witness stand time and time again. And you felt it in their words.
The defense closing argument has not yet begun, at least in time for this broadcast. We will bring it to you on our next episode, rather, of the debrief. The daughter of one of the accusers, though, took the stand earlier in the case, then had to testify again after the defense discovered that she was asking for donations starting the night before she begged to get on the witness stand.
So you did this on your own volition, is that right?
Correct.
Did you do it to help your mother?
Yes.
Now, as far as any actual compensation or money paid, did you receive, have you to date received any money from anyone?
No.
You and your husband are already planning on moving, isn't that right?
Correct.
So it's going to take another $50,000 to bring your mother with you?
Correct.
And you want money for a year's worth of wages, but your mother wasn't employed, was she? She wasn't working at the time of the attack, was she?
I don't believe so.
And she wasn't working now. She's not working now, right?
Well, she has her seasonal job now.
When you originally put this up, you were asking for $100,000, weren't you?
Yes, and then I realized that was way too much money.
And then you took the post down, right?
I did, because I was receiving threats online.
Okay, back one last time tonight, our attorney Linda Kenny Bodden and forensic death examiner Joseph Scott Morgan. So, Linda, the state wants people to take the testimony in broad strokes here. Look, they all sound kind of alike, therefore guilty across the board. The defense wants people to pick it apart piece by piece. That's what the defense wants the jury to do. This is a common tactic.
Right, absolutely, because technically, usually, you don't try all of these cases together unless you're talking them being a other crimes evidence, right? That they're substantially similar. But the state has the benefit here because victim number one, alleged victim number one, on her own is kind of questionable. But you add in the other four alleged victims and she becomes not so questionable, Aaron.
Okay, yeah, Joseph, I mean, there's some places for the defense to go with this case. You know, number one contradicted herself and then the daughter was begging to jump at the witness stand, then sort of had this fundraising thing going on the side. So can we believe the daughter, or is the family just out for money? And then they can turn around and say, okay, you know, number four was drunk, maybe didn't remember things properly. Number five freaked out after seeing the defendant on TV and then said she couldn't see what was going on in the hot tub, but assumed it had to have been something sexual. Look, the defense has some places to go with this, but is it going to be enough to then override accuser number two and accuser number three?
Yeah, this is a hill to climb. And, you know, when I first heard this as a layperson, when it comes to matters of the court, I felt as though that this was Frankenstein's monster they were building. But in the end, it seems an almost unsurmountable Herculean task that the defense has before them. You know, for me, the most compelling witnesses have been this poor woman who was just tending her garden. And yes, she didn't look him in the face, but she wasn't asking for this. And then the
exactly.
lady in the hot tub, that
yeah.
was very, very powerful.
Exactly. Joseph Scott Morgan, Linda Kenny Budden, thanks for joining us. We're going to wrap things up here on The Debrief. Our live trial coverage will continue in a moment, and we'll wait and see where things go in the Winslow case. We'll see you back here on The Debrief tomorrow.